I didn't come prepared today with charts and everything. So the exercise was planned like this. We discussed three things last time. Those who are attached, and those who are irresponsible, and those who are truly detached, and those who can truly let go things to Krishna. So three categories we discussed last time. So what I was planning was that we will write these three in the vertical line, attached and truly detached and irresponsible. And on the top we are planning to write the different roles. Like for example, for the men I was thinking men at home, that's men and their family, and men and the office. If you see, these are two major responsibilities that a man has. Similarly, woman also, Mataji is at, Mataji is with respect to their, they are for them also, these three are very important. So, last week I continuously speaking, I hope that it made sense to you. And it is very important for us to learn these concepts very thoroughly. Because scriptures are very vast and voluminous, but the essence of scriptures is very crystal clear. The substance of the scriptures is that one should cultivate one's heart in such a way that no matter whether you are a woman or a man or a young boy or a old man or whatever, one should be able to hand over everything back to Krishna at the time of death and surrender oneself utterly, unconditionally. That is actually the sum and substance of scriptures. And last week also we were discussing about how one acts only for the pleasure of Krishna in all the different roles and goals and responsibilities that one takes. There is an example given that somebody who becomes simply a big scholar in Sanskrit, who is very interested in dividing the sandhi, saying that if you split this word it will become like this, if you combine them it will become like this. Or there are other type of scholars who derive great delight in giving multiple meanings of the same words in Sanskrit. So such clever description of the scriptural verses or interpretations is not so much appreciated in the Vaishnava circles, especially for those who are normal practitioners, because that is not the ultimate goal of our Shastric study. Of course, one can also do that, like Vishnu Chakra Thakur or Bharadev Vidyabhushan, they all have done such things, Jiva Goswami, they have done that. But one is only interested in rasa and alankara of the scriptures, without understanding this substance what we are talking now. If one is only interested in scripture in that way, do you know what is he compared to? He is compared to a donkey who carries sandalwood on his back, whose fragrant smell is unknown to him, and he only knows the sandalwood to be like a big burden on his back. So that he is carrying sandalwood. If you ask him, how is sandalwood? He will say it's burdensome. That's all he knows. He doesn't know the smell of the sandalwood. But one who has got the smell of sandalwood is very fortunate. Similarly, somebody may say that I have completed this big burden of scriptures. So many scriptures I have read. But ultimately, if he doesn't know the substance, if he has not come to the conclusion, Ante Narayana Smriti, or Samsiddhir Haritoshanam, if he doesn't come to that conclusion, then such a study is useless. That's why last week we were discussing on this point of actually this thing is going to continue for some more time, because we have words like Indriyartheshu Vairagyam, then there is also Putra Dara Grihadishu Asakti Anavishwanga Putra Dara Grihadishu. Those things are coming subsequently. So there suddenly this talk would continue about what is the true meaning of detachment. So many people get confused about the right religious principles. Although people may read the same book, same Bhagavad Gita, our Bhagavatam, our scriptures. One may fail to capture the meaning behind the verses. Somebody may overemphasize on detachment without properly taking into account Krishna consciousness. Or somebody may refer detachment to be irresponsible behavior. So, even in the Vaishnava circle, it can happen if one is not hearing in proper line, one may get confused. One class I gave an example and asked some people. One husband, it's a real story. He got married to this was a devotee man, and he got married to a non-devotee woman. And when he got married, he wanted to make her into a devotee. So, in the morning she entered into the bathroom to take bath, and he was battering the door. And she shouted from inside, "Why are you battering the door? Just now I've gone into the bathroom." So he said, "Chant Krishna's name, chant Krishna's name." You know, because any time death will come, he was telling. So she got really fed up. So when she came out, she became so wild. There was a terrible fight between them. And then she left for her mother's home. Of course, after 2-3 years, she lived with the parents. During that time, she met another friend of hers who was also a Hare Krishna devotee. And she was surprised. How did you take the Hare Krishna? She asked her, because she was a school friend. But by her positive influence, this lady became a devotee there. And again, she returned back to her husband and told him that, you know, by your bad behavior, you must have, you know, driven me away from Krishna consciousness. By my old friend, I survived, you know. I could become a devotee, she said. So, of course, she became mature and this man also became mature over a period of time. So, I quoted the example in one class and I asked, how many of you say the husband's behavior was appropriate? So 3-4 men were raising hand. I said, can you explain? And he said, yeah, it was appropriate. He was trying to make her into a Krishna conscious devotee and she was a new woman. What's wrong? I was very surprised. How can one be so heartless? So this goes to show that even after we become devotees, we may not know the correct definition of what is detachment and what is attachment and what is irresponsible behavior. That is why we devoted one full class for that before. So, and also sometimes we are put in situations where we exactly don't know what is right behavior, what would be considered as detachment or what would be considered attachment. One can be bewildered about dharma. That's why by studying lives of different great souls and studying the shastra, we can come to some conclusion. So we will continue with that verse 13.8-12.
Amanitvam madam bitvam.
Ahimsa kshantirarjavam.
Ahimsa kshantirarjavam.
Acharyopasanam shaucham.
Acharyopasanam shaucham.
Stairyamatma vinigraha.
Stairyamatma vinigraha.
Indriyartheshu vairagyam.
Anahankaramevacha.
Janma-mrityu-jara-vyadi. Dukkha-doshanu-darshanam. Asaktirana-bhishvanga. Putra-dara-grihadishu. Nityam-cha-samachit-tattvam. Ishtanishtopapattishu. Mai chananya yogena. Bhakti ravya bhicharini. Vivikta desha sevitvam. Aratirjana samsadi. Adhyatma jnana nityatvam. Tattva-jnana-artha-darshanam. Eta-jnana-miti-proktam. Ajnanam-yadatonyatha. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So we completed cleanliness last time. We go to steadiness. Thairyam, he says. Steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. Without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. So the word steadiness has a connection to determination also. One who is steady can also be determined. So what is the meaning of steady? Steady means sthairyam. The word stha itself means well situated, firmly situated. Or one's enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness does not waver. It's not like a flower pot, which is very attractive in the beginning and very soon it subsides. So one's enthusiasm is not intermittent, or one's enthusiasm is not like into in the beginning and then it which fades down over a period of time. So steadiness means consistently one is practicing Krishna consciousness with great enthusiasm. There is a verse from the see, this is from the 11th canto, 16th chapter, 33rd verse. Bhudharanam aham sthairyam. The Krishna says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the same way in the 11th canto, it is explained, the Lord says, I am steadiness of mountains, he says. Bhudharanam aham sthairyam. So just as the Mount Everest is steady, rock steady as we say, so Lord says, I am steadiness in the mountain, he says, because there is nothing in the world can be more steady than that. Also in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, there is a very nice example given for somebody who is not steady. The example is given, sometimes during the rainy season in the clouds, although the cloud is carrying huge quantities of water for the welfare of all the people, still sometimes the lightning appears in one cloud, disappears and then appears in another cloud. So Prabhupada gives there this understanding example of this analogy. He says, sometimes a woman becomes unchaste towards one man and then she leaves his company and goes to another man and then the marriage ends in divorce or something, and because of which there's a great chaos in the family. Children get disturbed and father gets disturbed, business gets disturbed, everything is disturbed. So that Prabhupada says that one should live peacefully in one home. So this is a famous verse. Lokabandushu megheshu vidyuta chala sauhridaha stairyam na chakru kaminya purusheshu guneshuva. Here it comes, stairyam na chakru kaminya. Here is an example of not steady, somebody whose mind is not steady. So this unsteadiness that is explained in this verse, in the same manner, people's minds can also become unsteady in their determination or in their enthusiasm for entering Krishna consciousness. One of the main reasons for that is one has not given up sense gratification or hope in sense gratification. One still has some hope that probably sense gratification is not all that bad. Probably it may give happiness if I try again. So then one becomes weak. So the example is given how one should not pour water and lit fire and pour water and lit fire. Then one's determination cannot increase in Krishna consciousness. So one has to firmly derived like that verse says, Bhogaishwarya Prasaktanam Tayapahrita Chetasam. So the Bhoga and Aishwarya, they keep a person hooked to the anchor of material sense gratification to the world. Like the anchor story which Bhaktisiddhanta says, it's hooked, it cannot move. Similarly, when one is hooked in sense gratification, then one cannot take off.
That is why you will see these verses, they all are connected one after another, you will see, step by step. Here he is talking about steadiness. And then subsequently you will see Indriyatesh Vairagyam comes subsequently, immediately after this. Why? Because they have a connection between the two. So one cannot be steady in one's practice if one keeps his heart in sense gratification. Because then one will keep trying both. Also, unsteadiness is not only due to sense gratification, it is also due to lack of Shraddha, lack of faith. Like when one lacks faith in Guru, in Krishna, in the scriptures, and the eternal truths that are explained by Acharyas, one has not developed a very firm faith, then one cannot be steady also. Like sometimes you find some people coming to our classes, they stay for some time, attend some classes, again they leave and go, they go to the clubs, again they take to drinking, smoking or habits like that. And after some time they are frustrated that they will come here again. Again they may continue. This is very commonly seen. Prabhupada explains about them in one verse where three classes of devotees he explains. First class devotee, second class devotee and third class devotee. And Prabhupada writes there in that purport in Bhagavad Gita, I think it comes in 9.3 I think. 9.3, Ashraddha Dana Purusha. Dharmasyasya Parantapa. There he writes. That the third class devotees, they come, they take to Krishna consciousness for some time, but then their faith is not very steady. They don't continue for a long time. They stand a good chance to be swayed away by Maya's forces.
But a second class devotee is one whose faith is very deep rooted. He may not be able to present arguments against some atheist or somebody. But his faith is very, very firm. He will never leave the feet of Krishna. And the first class devotee is one who also has a great Shraddha and also has great wisdom to defeat opposing arguments. So, there the third class devotee is unsteady. Why? Because of lack of faith, lack of Shraddha in all the truths. So, one should have Shraddha in the spiritual master's ability to deliver an individual. One also should have Shraddha in the Guru's understanding of the ultimate eternal state of enlightenment. One should have faith in that also. For example, if you are taking shelter of a Guru, Guru says the ultimate attainment is not Brahman or Brahma Jyoti, but ultimate attainment is Goloka Vrindavan, where everything is personal, everyone is personal, there is exchange of love. That is the last word in transcendence. There is nothing beyond that. Krishna is the last word in transcendence. Prabhupada writes that. So one should have firm faith in that. One cannot have one's own understanding of what the ultimate truth is and take shelter of a Guru who has another understanding. It's not possible. So, all these things come under faith. And that faith, once that faith is deep-rooted, then one can become steady also.
This is sthairyam.
And Prabhupada calls it literally as determination here. Steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. And without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. And self-control, that is Atma Vinigraha, means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything which is against the path of spiritual progress. That Prabhupada calls it as Atma Vinigraha. One devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada saying that Prabhupada, my age seems to be going, so when should I get married? He wrote a letter to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, first you practice sense control and the marriage will automatically come, that you don't have to worry. It will happen anyway. But first one should try to control one's mind and senses, perform some tapasya, do some swadhyaya, study of the scriptures, and live in the company of Vaishnavas. And in this way one should make some progress.
If you have got a human body and you have not endeavored to control the senses, then what is the use of your human life? Prabhupada wrote like that. When one devotee wanted to marry. And Prabhupada was quoting how, in the Vedic life, if somebody has to marry or somebody has to beget a progeny, they would be advised by their fathers to go and perform some tapasya. You can see that prachetas were ordered by their father, Prachina Parishad. That you go to the, he told them that you all get married and, you know, create progeny. What did they do? They went to the forest to perform penances. So what does that show? That shows that creating progeny is not a matter of just a man and woman coming together and begetting a child. That even cats and dogs can do. That is not a very big deal. Mosquitoes are producing in millions. So man can never compete with them. But what is special about a human being creating a progeny? When a human being performs penance, Prabhupada used to quote this verse very often. Nayam deho dehavajam duloke kashtan kaman arhate vidubujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhye tasmat brahma saukhyam tvanantam. This verse and another verse, Nunam pramatta kurute vikrama idindri pritya pranoti nasadumanye katatmanojam asannapi kleshada ashadeha. So these verses, what they mean, that sense gratification is available for animals and sense control is for humans. Atma vinigraha means control of the senses. Only human being can do that, not the animals. In fact, human being is unique in several respects in comparison to animals, if you see. Shankara made a statement, he said that three things, if one has to get in one's life, one should have Mahatkrupa, or one should have the greatest fortune or blessings of the Supreme for getting three things in life. One, he said, is the human form of life, in order to attain that. Another one is a great aspiration to return back home, back to Godhead. A great fire or eagerness to return back to Godhead. Third is a great craving for saintly association. He said, if one person has these three things, he can consider that this person has attained the mercy of the Lord. He has achieved the ultimate fortune in his life. Because if you have these three things, you are sure to go back to Godhead. Because you got a human body, and you have a strong desire to return back to Godhead, and you are fond of saintly association, then one is sure to go back to Godhead. Because in human body, human body is so designed that one can very easily control the mind and senses by sincerely attempting to follow the instructions given. In the section of Narada Boy, who before he attained self-realization, there is a verse in Bhagavatam which says that Narada had some four special qualities. Now I will seek help from all of you. I don't remember all the four. Sanskrit word, he says, Alpa Bhashini, he says. He used to speak very little. He was very curt in his speech. Whatever was needed, only that much he spoke. And what do you mean by saying needed? Whatever was Krishna conscious, he spoke. Otherwise, he wouldn't speak. Alpa Bhashini. Dante, it is said. Dante means he was very disciplined and controlled in his senses. And Akridanake, isn't it? He was not playful. That means he wasn't interested in sports, although he was only a small boy, it is said in Bhagavatam. He was not fond of playing cricket. Small children nowadays take a bat and they go out, you can see that. Nowadays, the men who are making dolls of Rama, Krishna, Saraswati, Lakshmi, they used to make dolls and sell in the market. Nowadays they are making cricket bats and selling. If you ask them, why are you doing this, why have you given up your demigod or devata dolls you used to make, they say, I make more profit in cricket bats. You can see that. Because children are too fond of playing cricket nowadays, you can see that. Such games. But Narada Muni, they said, he was not interested in sports, idle sports, proper rights, idle sports. He was not interested in speaking too much, Alpa Bhashini. He would only speak whatever was necessary. And Dante, he was self-controlled. Dante. And one more fourth quality, anybody knows? Krishna Shapu, you know, fourth quality? Any of you? Four qualities are said there.
Yeah, even there is Alpa Bhashini. Anyway, one more quality comes there. So all those qualities are mentioned. You read that purport, what Papa says, in that place Papa says, without being self-controlled, without being disciplined, and without becoming fully obedient to the spiritual master, one will never be able to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And without following the instructions of the spiritual master, no one goes back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada writes that. That's the concluding part of the purport. What he says, three things he says. Without becoming self-disciplined, that is the first thing he says. Without becoming self-disciplined, then he says, without being self-controlled. Self-controlled, disciplined and fully obedient. Three qualities he says. Self-controlled, disciplined and fully obedient. Three qualities he says. So Guru, only then one can follow the instructions of Guru, he says. And then, without following some instructions of Guru, no one can go back to Godhead, he says that. So here, Prabhupada is talking about Atma Vinigraha, that means self-controlled. So this self-control is explained by Rupa Goswami, which is later elaborately described in the commentary of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Prabhupada also gives commentary to Nectar of Instruction. If you see Vacha Vegam, Manasa Vegam, Krodha Vegam, the first thing to be controlled is the speech. One has to control the speech. That means one should maintain gravity and one should speak whatever is only required. Otherwise, frivolous speech will drain our energy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur once, in one of his descriptions about Prajalpa, he writes, the nature of talking too much is that it winds up our mind. Our mind gets wound up. And in dry argumentation, there is no end. There is no conclusion. It makes our heart feel very empty and dry. In that connection, he quotes the verse which Sarvam Bhattacharya said. What do you say? Srigala Tarkika Sange Bhevu Bhevu Kari. There is one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, Tarkika, in the company of Tarkika means logicians. Tarkika Srigala Sange. Srigala means like the foxes. All the logicians, he compares them to whom? Foxes. In the company of foxes, fox-like logicians, what I was doing? Bhevu Bhevu. I was making Bhevu sound like the fox. He says, But then, my dear Lord Chaitanya, after I met you, I gave up my foolish argumentation and useless talks. And now my mouth is filled with talks of Krishna and passions of Krishna, he says. So, Atma Vinigraha actually begins with control of the tongue, control of the speech, Vacha Vegam. And subsequently, all the other things also, Manasa Vegam, Krodha Vegam, Jigva Vegam, Udar Vegam, Upastha Vegam. All these things. So, when one follows this Atma Vinigraha, when one is self-controlled and one is focused, like, see Prabhupada, how he explains self-control, see. He says, self-control means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything which is against the path of spiritual progress. This is real renunciation. So here Prabhupada explains something to the effect of anukulyasa sankalpa, pratikulyasa varjana. Whatever is favorably accepted. That means glorifying Krishna, speaking about Krishna is something which our mouth should do, certainly. And in that connection one can speak hours and hours, any number of hours one can speak. Our acharyas delight in speaking hours and hours about Krishna. That is why whatever is anukul should be adopted. And in the name of not speaking, one should not avoid glorifying Krishna. And Pratikulyasa Varjana, whatever is unfavorable, one should reject it. That's why Rupa Goswami has given those six items. What are anukul to bhakti and what are pratikul to bhakti. And by naturally following that, then one will attain self-control very, very easily. By that. Then he continues, Indriyartheshu Vairagyam. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything. Okay. The senses are so strong
that they are always anxious to have sense gratification. One should not cater to these demands, which are not necessary. The senses should only be gratified to keep the body fit, so that one can discharge his duty in advancing in spiritual life. The most important and uncontrollable sense is the tongue. If one can control the tongue, then there is every possibility of controlling the other senses. The function of the tongue is to taste and to vibrate. Therefore, by systematic regulation, the tongue should always be engaged in tasting the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. As far as the eyes are concerned, they should not be allowed to see anything but beautiful form of Krishna. That will control the eyes. Similarly, the ear should be engaged in hearing about Krishna, and the nose in smelling the flowers offered to Krishna. This is the process of devotional service. And it is understood here that Bhagavad Gita is simply expounding the science of devotional service. Devotional service is the main and sole objective. Unintelligent commentators on the Bhagavad Gita try to divert the mind of the reader to other subjects. But there is no other subject in Bhagavad Gita other than devotional service. So this is Indriyartheshu Vairagya. One should not allow one's senses to wander astray in hovering over the sense objects. So the senses are sometimes compared to the cows, Indriya Gochara they are called. Go also means senses, the Indriyas. So just like a cow wanders away, sometimes being greedy for the lushy green grass to graze them, in the same way our senses have a tendency to wander away in sense gratification. In one of the Prabhupada's Prabhupada explains, the expert yogi is one who can expertly restrain the senses which are very eager to act loosely and unrestrictedly. He writes that in one of the Prabhupada's. Our senses have a tendency to act very loosely and unrestrictedly. That is the tendency of the senses. But a yogi is one who is expert enough to keep them under control, just like an expert snake charmer. Prabhupada gives example. A snake charmer has an instrument, isn't it? He plays that instrument and keeps the senses, keeps the snakes under control inside the baskets or something, like that. In the same way, a devotee, like the eyes and the nose and the tongue and the ears and the sense of the skin, so all these five senses should be kept chaste in Krishna's service. Chastity of the senses means using the senses in the service of the master of the senses. That is the chastity of the senses. So, why is this statement made here? Because the general lower tendency in this material world that arises from false ego is that the senses always want to gratify their sense objects. That is how the senses have been allowed to act loosely for millions of lifetimes. That is very normal in anyone's life. When we talk of sense gratification, there are many things that go into it. For example, beginning from the tongue, as Prabhupada says, eating, overeating, are eating very opulently, and that makes one fat, and sometimes excess nutrition agitate a person's mind. Actually, we do eating for the sake of keeping our body and soul together to lead a healthy life. Eating is done for that. Nobody dies in this world due to undereating. People die due to overeating only, and overeating is a tendency you can see there. Similarly, all the other senses. Like when one's senses become strong, Prabhupada gives the example how sometimes a man is married to five wives and all the wives are pulling him to different room. Prabhupada gives the example in Bhagavatam, one of the purports. That's like, you know, one wife is pulling his one hand, another is pulling his another hand. In this way, all of them are pulling him to different rooms to satisfy their own demands. They all have their demands to make to him, and they all are dragging him to different rooms. Similarly, he says our senses also pull us in that way. For example, I believe many of you must have this experience. When you are eating, sometimes some food is very
finely made, delicious it is. Taste is very good. What is that thing which you think is most tasty, according to all of you? I can take that example. Yes, Asif Prabhu? Sweet rice? You like sweet rice the most, or is there any more finer sweet? Shikhand, yeah, shikhand is good, I think. So if you see, sometimes something is a very fine sweet, very attractive, you put it in the mouth and it's so tasty, and you keep on eating more and more. It's very tasty. You feel little more. And then the stomach starts crying. The stomach is already full. The stomach is paining. And stomach is saying, "Hey, tongue! You rascal, you are throwing so much of food inside. Here, I have to digest. I have to do the homework. For you to simply taste and push inside is very easy. Stop it!" he shouts. But tongue says, "No, a little more. It's so tasty." Like that. Sometimes the stomach is so hungry. Udara vegam. Jihva vegam is different from udara vegam. Udara vegam is so strong, some food is simply like saw powder. There is no taste. But somebody keeps on stuffing the stomach. And the tongue is crying. Hey, stomach, how can you demand such a horrible food which has no taste? And you are accepting so much, but it has to pass through me. And I have to tolerate it. So tongue is angry. That means sometimes even amongst the senses there is competition between the tongue and the stomach. You can see that, isn't it? So in this way we can find, just as the senses are pulling a man in different directions, we can see in our lives that all the senses are pulling us in a different direction. And the tongue is compared to the rudder of a boat. Boat or a ship. There is a rudder which can completely change the direction. The bottom, they have like a tongue kind of thing. So you change the rudder's orientation, then the whole direction can change. Similarly, all the problems in our spiritual life begin from here only. That means when we don't control our eating. Either you overeat too much udara vegam, or you prepare very delicious fine foods and you eat, then one becomes a victim of the tongue. And in this way, of course, Prabhupada says, "Once you eat only prasad." But if you read Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada clearly specifies, even in prasad also, he says one should not have too opulent foods just for the sake of satisfying the tongue. Many things are right there. Finer details are right there. So when we eat, then the senses become very strong, fed by the food, the eyes, the nose, the ears, and all the karmendriyas of the body, they all become very strong. Then one cannot control the other senses when one is not controlling the tongue. So when we talk of sense gratification, it's not that the Shastras prohibit sense gratification. If sense gratification is prohibited, we would die. We will not be able to survive also in our conditioned state. That is why Shastras allow whatever is needed for the body, that is allowed. For example, we are allowed to eat food, offer to Krishna first, and then you accept food. Similarly, one is allowed to marry in a religious way, and that is not prohibited also. So these quotas, what is allowed, these are compared to taking an appropriate amount of salt in food. For example, if the salt is appropriate, then the food is very good, very nice. Sometimes you find that the salt is excess. What happens? It's not tasty. Sometimes there is no salt. It's difficult to eat the food. But you need appropriate amount of salt. So our gratification of senses also are allowed only in a restricted way. And that is all prescribed. Tena tektena bhunjita magradakasya suddhanam. He says that one should not exceed that quota. Within that limit only, one should gratify one's senses. Now what happens if one does not follow this rule of accepting only the quota? Actually, accepting only quota is not considered a very great thing. It's not that somebody is accepting quota and thinks that I am wonderful. Actually, Shastra says one should eat for keeping body and soul together. But we all know that we are not just eating to keep body and soul together. Matters do taste, do matter. Isn't it? Taste do matter. Just like, what goes inside the mouth. Like, Dhruva Maharaj was eating kandamul, Not kandamul, one particular type of fruit he was eating, which had absolutely no taste. It was simply like, it had some substance, stuff. But you eat it, it is tasteless.
But why he was eating that in the early days? Because he just wanted to fill up his belly with something. Kandamul is also like that. How many of you have eaten kandamul? You know, yeah. Sometimes they serve in prasad, I think, sometimes, yeah. So the kandamul is tasteless, isn't it? Practically no taste. So, that's what he was eating for his, simply for his survival in the early time. So, we cannot eat like that, so we are given some quota. Yes, you can prepare these items and you can offer to the Lord and you can accept. But what happens when one exceeds the quota of sense gratification given in anything? In everything there is a quota given for us. So when one exceeds the quota, then what happens? When sense gratification becomes the goal of life, then one loses sight of what is right, what is wrong, what is beneficial, what is not beneficial, what is pure, what is impure, what would elevate me, what would degrade me. One loses sight of that. You see, it is said on the physical plane there are animals who enjoy their senses on a physical plane. And then when you go to the next plane, if you go to the intellectual plane, then there is human being, because human being can reason, he can evaluate, he can understand what is right, what is wrong, and human being can control his senses, which the dogs and cats and animals cannot do. Because the animals, their body acts almost like a machine. You can say it's just like a machine. They cannot function otherwise. You see, for example, a lion, according to a lion mates only once in 12 years for begetting offspring. And that is programmed in the body of the lion. Other times the lion will not feel any attraction for the mate. So, for example, every animal is programmed like that, like a bull or a cow, or if you see pig or insects, and all of them, their body is programmed. When they want to eat, there's a saliva secretion at a particular time, isn't it? Particular time they feel hungry. Like you can see the cow, you know, as soon as the farmer takes the bucket, when the cow hears the sound of the bucket, immediately she will turn. Now he is going to feed me now. She knows. Exactly in time they eat, in the time they mate, they follow all those rules and regulations. Very precisely, just like a machine. So the highest pleasure that the animals know is physical pleasure. They don't know anything beyond that. Yeah. They cannot enjoy anything beyond that. But if you see a human being, you know, he has his mental and intellectual avenues awake and he can reason. This is right, I should do. This is wrong, I should not do. But the spiritual plane is only available for those humans who become divine, not ordinary human being. A human being has divine, so human being has two options, animalistic option and divine option. So we can come from that intellectual plane down to physical plane and be satisfied in the physical pleasures of this world. Chase after them, hunt for them, enjoy them and remain an animal. Little more refined, a two-legged animal. One can remain there. But if one goes from that intellectual plane by proper reasoning, by proper discrimination, understanding what is right, what is wrong, and what is sense gratification, what should be given up, and then one can elevate oneself to the spiritual plane. One can go there. From there, one can actually, such thing can perform miracles in one's life. Because when one comes to spiritual plane, one gets realization what an average human being cannot get. Such realizations you can get in spiritual plane. So, the Shastras very strongly advocate that one should, like, uddhared atmanatmanam, atmanam avasadayet, atmaivahi atmanavabandhur, atmaivirupuratmana. One should elevate oneself, not degrade oneself. Shastras say that. And the nature of sense gratification is, sense gratification saps our intelligence. We can see that by sense gratification one loses one's good intelligence. But one cannot think well, one cannot act well, one cannot remember Krishna, it's not possible. So, indriyartheshu vairagyam, he says. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a very famous verse about him. What is the famous verse? There are two verses. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogam Shikshartame Eka Purusha Purana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripambudirtam Charanam Papadji. That's one verse which talks about Vairagya. Dhyatish Vairagya. Another verse also talks, Ihadeki Prithihana Gauru Bhagavan. What is the verse? Mahaprabhu Yara Bhaktagan Vairagya Pradhan Ihadeki Prithihana Gauru Bhagavan. So, see, both of us talk about Vairagya, isn't it? Mahaprabhu Yara Bhaktagan Vairagya Pradhan. Now, we may get a bit confused when we hear these verses. Because in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is such a elaborate description about the different types of foods you find and all that. So, and many of the associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were married and they were grihasthas, and Mahaprabhu appreciated them, we can see that. So what type of vairagya, is he talking about something like mendicant's vairagya, ascetic's vairagya, what is this vairagya that's being spoken here? That vairagya is very special because the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, they relished all types of prasadam that was offered to Krishna and then offered to them. At the same time, they also were having the capability to fast as many days as it was needed when Mahaprabhu did not eat. Like you see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once, because of the order of Ramachandra Puri, he did not eat properly for several days. In those days, Vaishnava completely fasted. They didn't eat anything. And the other days, you will find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes would feed all the Vaishnavas like anything, and they would eat. So, their eating and not eating was simply for the pleasure of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was their only goal. Just to please him. That was their goal. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, you will see, sometimes he would eat what would be served for 5 or 10 people. So much he would eat. Like when Jagannath Pandit would be serving him, Mahaprabhu would say, no, you know, I don't want so much, please give me some boiled vegetables or something, I am a sannyasi. You know, he would say like that. But then even Advaita Acharya, and also later even Jagannath Pandit, they would feed him, they would say that, you know, you are eating chapan bhog, you know, as Jagannath. What is it difficult for you to eat all this? Please take more, they would be serving him. And he ate also. You can see that. But if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was his attitude in approaching the prasadam? Like once when Advaita Acharya wanted to call only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu alone and wanted to feed him profusely, he had cooked so many different items at home. So he had served a huge platefuls of prasadam on his plate. So when Mahaprabhu came there, he saw prasad. He became so jubilant, he started chanting the holy names, he offered obeisances to the prasadam, and he started singing songs, glorifying the prasadam. How wonderful prasad is. And Advaita Acharya said, all that is nice, now you please kindly honor the prasad also. Isn't it? So we can see, you know that song he sings, Eka Dena Shanti Pure Prabhu Advaite Ragare Duye Prabhu. Duye Prabhu is both of them, Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu. Viprabhu bhojane bhosilo shakori aswadana Prabhu bole bhaktagana Eisha Krishna aswadilo. So he is saying, O Advaita Acharya, this shak is suddenly tasted by Krishna. How can I say that? It is so delicious. It must be tasted by Krishna, otherwise it cannot be so tasty. So, we can find the attitude of a devotee, how he approaches anything that is fed to the senses, the way these things are approached. Srinivasa Acharya is begetting a child, but before that you can see he goes to Mahaprabhu. He says, I don't know where from this strong desire came, what is impelling this desire in my heart that I want to have a child. Isn't it? So you can see that means the desires that come in the heart of devotees are all actually impelled by the Lord Himself. Very special. In Chaitanya Charitamrita we find like that. So for grihasthas, the vairagya means despite living in any condition of life, whether poor or rich, or one is a millionaire or one is a pauper, to keep one's life focused on Krishna. That is actually the greatest challenge. And not get swayed by the luxuries and comforts
that come in this world and forgetting Krishna. So it's very easy in this world to be swayed by the facilities offered by Maya and forget Krishna. Because the tendency of sense gratification is such that the sense gratification pampers our senses and it renders our heart weak. And once the remembrance of Krishna is also camouflaged by that, we can see when one gratifies one's senses, it makes one very, very weak hearted. That's why Krishna says, Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktanam Taya Purva Chetasam Samadhu Na Vidyate, he says. Because Vyavasaya Atma Buddhi doesn't come. Samadhi doesn't come, he says. Samadhi means undistracted, pinpointed, one-pointed, analog devotion. That is Samadhi. But sense gratification makes our spiritual life blunt. It makes us weak. It makes us very weak-hearted. So he says, Indriyartheshu Vairagyam. So devotee should be very meticulous in analyzing, am I doing this for my sense gratification or am I doing this for Krishna's pleasure or Krishna's service? At every point of time, this question should cross the mind of a devotee. If a devotee is sincere, this question will surely cross the mind at every given point of time. That is the vairagya that is being spoken here. It's not that devotees are like this Babajis who go to some Himalayas, who eat kandamool, who eat roots and who don't meet the people. They put a circle of fire around them in summer and all that. Such vairagya is not at all expected by a devotee. A devotee's vairagya is only this. In whatever situation a devotee is put in, some of us are brahmachari, some of us are grihasthas, some people are housewives. So everyone in every situation has to ask this question. Am I doing this for my own sense gratification? Or am I doing it for Krishna's pleasure? So very easy to know the difference. The difference is Atmendriya Priti Vancha Tarebalikam. Krishnendriya Priti Cha Tare Premana. When we do it for our own enjoyment, it is sense gratification. When we do it for Krishna's enjoyment, it is Krishna Seva. So what is the result of acting only for Krishna? It's only a matter of time. One will gradually become transcendental. Because one starts acting with spiritual senses. In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that those people who are in this material world, they act with their material senses. Like for example, we eat with our hands and mouth, and we walk with our legs, we see the things with material eyes. And acting materially means doing these things for one's gratification, one's selfish gratification, or doing for the gratification of the extended self, which means the family or the society or social service and all that. So this is acting on a material platform. There is another platform where a devotee stops completely acting materially and becomes aloof from the body and is transcendently situated, where he acts only spiritually, like Prahlad Maharaj or Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur was beaten up on his body, did he feel pain? Why he didn't feel pain? Because he was acting transcendently. He was acting only with his spiritual senses. It is said in Sound Canto, Prahlad Maharaj was eating, sleeping, walking, doing activities, but those activities were taking place in his body without his knowledge also. Can you imagine? How? Because he was only acting on the spiritual plane. Acting on the spiritual plane means only the spiritual reality was reality for him. Material reality went to the background. That was not very prominent for Prahlad. He was sitting in the class along with his demoniac friends, and there was economics and sociology, all those things were being taught, and his mind was always in Krishna, remembrance of Krishna, remembering the qualities of the Lord, pastimes of the Lord, nature of the Lord. He was in a different world, so he was acting transcendently. So these are two platforms, acting transcendently and acting materially. Acting materially means one is constantly attentive to gratify one's senses. That is acting materially at every point of time. So where are the devotees like all of us? We are aware of what it means to act spiritually, but we have not yet attained that state. So we are somewhere in between. We are in between, where we still have the material senses with which we are acting sometimes materially, sometimes spiritually. So we are semi-spiritual. About that, Krishna says that famous verse, Naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manjeta tattvavit pashyan shrinvan sprishan jigran ashtan gachan swapan shvasan indriyani indriyarteshu vartanta iti matva sajjate. He says, pradapan visrjan unmishan nimishan napi. So there he says, Naiva kinchit karomi. I am not the doer at all, because the senses and the body are doing. Like that people like Prahlada Maharaj feel. Naiva kinchit karomi iti yukto manyeta tattvavit. One who is a tattvavit, knower of truth, he is fixed in that realization. Pashyan, he is seeing, but he is not seeing at all. The material things. Pashyan, shinvan, while seeing, while hearing. Jigran, Gachan, he is going, he is coming, he is eating, he is sleeping, he is evacuating. All these activities he is doing. Just like some machine is doing, the body is acting. But his consciousness is already hooked in Krishna. That's a very elevated platform. It's a transcendental platform. So, before we transcend the pushings and pullings of the senses and become transcendentally situated, one has to strenuously endeavor to control the senses till that point of time, till you become transcendentally situated. So, the greatest reward for one who controls the senses now at the near-fetch stage is that gradually the pushings and pullings of the senses will stop. And at one point of time, one's spiritual senses will be kindled and awakened, and one will start acting spiritually. For example, all of us have a Swarupa, as a gopi or a gopa or friend of Krishna in some way. So, if one stops sense gratification, material sense gratification, and keeps on endeavoring to serve Krishna again and again and again, repeatedly, what happens? See, what are we all trying to do now? We have a material body, we have material senses, we have material desires, which we cannot deny, we have. But we are trying to sideline the material desires, say no to the material desires, and we are trying to put up the same role with which we are acting in the spiritual world. Like there we put tilak, here also we put tilak. We wear kantumala, and we render services with our karmendriyas and jnanendriyas. Correct? What are we doing? Whatever we do in the spiritual world, we are trying to do here. Same thing. You hear about Krishna, speak about Krishna, taste Krishna prasadam, smell the flower offered to Krishna, have darshan of beautiful forms of Radha and Krishna. We're doing the same again with our body, we dance for the pleasure of Krishna. With hands and legs we render services. So we're doing these things, what happens? We have a material body, but we are doing spiritual activities, which we would be doing in spiritual body. But gradually what happens? The material component gradually becomes nullified. That means gradually our material tendencies go away for a period of time. And we start acting spiritually more and more and more and more. At one point of time, you forget the material body. So that is considered the greatest success in spiritual life. When you completely forget all your material upadis, sarvapadi, vinirmuktam, completely become free from all material designations. Realize that I am Krishna Das or Krishna Dasi. Realize that Swarupa. And then that is how one can actually overcome the senses. Shakno tiheva sodum prakshari remokshana. Krishna says, kama krodod bhavam vidhi saita sasuki naraha. This verse says that one should strenuously endeavor to control kama krodha udbhavam vidhi. So he says, kama krodha one should try to strenuously control. See, Krishna has very mercifully, compassionately given us this material world of suffering, so that we can suffer. Actually, the right understanding is so that we can suffer, but the living entity's understanding is so that they can enjoy. So Krishna has very mercifully granted this suffering to us. So what we should do? We should very diligently avoid this gift what Krishna has given owing to our independent enjoying mentality, and seek pleasure only in Krishna. So that should be our reciprocation, isn't it? So even the Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam is also Krishna's mercy for those living entities who want to be independent. But those who are wise, what should they do? They should say no to this. Krishna, you have not given to me, you have given it to those who wanted to enjoy separate from you, but I don't want to enjoy separate from you. Who said that I want to be independent of you, I want to be with you? That song is such a wonderful song, the Gopinath, Namani Vedanashino. In that song there is a line which says, My dear Lord, I am such a great murka, I am such a great fool that I have left your company and I have come to this world so that I can enjoy separate from you. And you are also, what kind of master are you that your servant has gone away from you to wander and enjoy separately, and you are also keeping quiet, and you are not, you know, dragging him back to your feet. How can you afford to leave your servant like this? Even the asuras, asura sakala, payilo sharana, even great asuras like Hiranyakashipu, isn't Hiranyaksha, Kumbhakarna, they all attend your feet. And now here I am, wandering in this world, suffering piteously, and how is it that you have left me like this alone, not calling me back to your feet? This is injustice. So he is singing like this, very beautiful song. So those who sincerely approach Krishna in this way, they can give up sense gratification. Actually, in this world, the topmost pleasure is sense gratification, especially the pleasure that comes in the company of man and woman. That is the topmost pleasure of sense gratification. When any of the ashrams, if one in brahmachari or sannyas or grihastha ashram, if one follows the stipulated rules and regulations to avoid all these different types of sense gratification, which are to be avoided according to the standards prescribed in the ashram, and endeavor sincerely to please Krishna and live only for the pleasure of Krishna, such for them the amrit is waiting. Samritatvaya kalpate, isn't it? Yamhena vyatiyantyete purusham purusharishava samadukka sukam dhiram samritatvaya kalpate. When you try to avoid gratifying your senses, there is a lot of dukkam. There is a lot of strain involved in that, because one has been in the material world for many, many lifetimes. Just as one would want to please someone, for the sake of pleasing that person, one would do anything. Just like you see parents sometimes when they want to raise a child, they go to the market and get the best things, right? They get Farax. I know only Farax. Anybody knows anything better than Farax? Yeah? Krishna Kishore Prabhu, anything better than Farax, you know? You can ask him. Huh? Yeah. Something like that for the child. Naturally, the parent would try to bring special things for the child so that the child can grow very hale and healthy. Correct? Similarly, a man who is wedded, who is married, naturally tries to get the best things for his wife. He is trying to bring her the best sari. He is trying to bring her some nice things that she will like. So that his desire is to please her and win her heart. Correct? You can see that everyone does that. Everyone has an object of love in life, and they try to serve that object of love. Somebody tries to serve mother and father very nicely. He earns a lot of big salary and buys many things to please the parents. In the same way, one should try to please Krishna, exactly in the same way. The spirit is the same. Only the difference is, serving Krishna is a pure spiritual activity. Now, why I am telling these examples? Jiva Goswami gives this example. He says, when you are endeavoring to please Krishna, there may be many impediments, and you may have to take a lot of trouble. But for the relatives, if we can take trouble, why not take trouble for Krishna's sake? For the sake of relatives, we take so much trouble. For our own child, or one's wife, or one's mother and father, one takes so much trouble. Similarly, for Krishna's sake, one should take trouble to please Krishna. So, and one such trouble is endeavoring to control one's mind and senses, or not allowing them to wander loosely. Because if somebody is little careless about what I am talking here, that means that person is not serious enough to go back to Godhead. If somebody is little careless and thinking that it's all right, after all I am a devotee, then that means one is not very serious about going back to Godhead. Because sense gratification and Krishna consciousness are diametrically opposed. In fact, when sense gratification stops, then Krishna consciousness begins. In the true sense, the real awakening begins by that. But if one is letting fire and pouring water, we can drag on for millions of years and we may not get much realization. Of course, we may get some little ajnasukriti, some benefit. But indriyateshu vairagyam. It's very, very important. At the time of initiation, we take the four vows in front of the spiritual master and the deities and Agni and Vaishnavas and everything. But then the fire of those vows doesn't remain in the heart for long, because one tends to become weak. So, as the years progress, if one refrains from sense gratification always, and one is attentive to this, at the same time engaging the senses in Krishna service exclusively, then this is one of the processes of knowledge given here. One should not cater to these demands. Prabhupada is saying, the senses are so strong that they are always anxious to have sense gratification. One should not cater to these demands, which are not necessary. The senses should only be gratified to keep the body fit, so that one can discharge his duty in advancing in spiritual life. That is why in Vedic custom, if you see, people keep their home very clean, people keep their dresses very clean. Like, you know, the service that they perform for the Lord is done very meticulously. For example, I remember in our home, my grandmother used to wash this saris, you know. And she used to have a very tall, just like this, wire. So tall wire she used to have. And she used to put, put with a long stick. She would put the sari in the top many times, you know. Of course, it was a little lesser than this. So sometimes the sari would be up to this, you know. So we were small children. But sometimes, she would never let any of us in that room, you know. But somewhere, sometimes the door would be open, we would go there, and we would want to touch it, you know. And immediately she would shout, give a big shout, hey, don't touch it, you know. So sometimes in order to frighten her, we used to, you know, say like, we are going to touch it now, we are going to touch it. We used to frighten her like that, you know. So we used to jump up and down and she used to cry, you know, don't touch it. So later on when we grew up, we understood how strict she was in wearing a clean sari, and nobody who has not taken baths should touch it, huh? So why these things? Because Lord is supremely pure. If you have to achieve Him, then we also have to become pure. Prabhupada says, if you want to enter fire, you have to become fire. You have to be like fire, and then you can enter fire. So Lord is supremely pure. And if you see the worship of the deities that are done at homes, and the kind of abhishek they perform, the kind of laksharchana they perform, kind of offerings they give to the Lord with great reverence and respect. The first step in spiritual life is respect. Love comes much, much later. We don't have to worry for love about it at this stage. At this stage, it's better for us to serve the Lord with respect. And the love is a concomitant result. If we keep doing with respect, automatically love will come. So, when do we become loose in our senses? When we are unclean, when we are careless. But if we are offering our respect and worship and follow the principles of Krishna consciousness very strictly, then one will not fall prey to the dangerous senses. So we will leave it here. We will talk the next one in the next class. Anahankara meva cha janma mrtyu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anukarshana. Yeah, Prabhupada says about this, using the different senses in the Lord's service. One very famous verse, this verse number is Bhagavatam 10:10:38. Please all of you repeat this very famous verse. Vani gunanu kathane,
Vani gunanu kathane,
Shravanau kathayam,
Shravanau kathayam,
Hastau chakarmasu, Mana tava pada yorna. Smrityam shirastava. Nivasa jagat praname. Drishti satam. Darshanestu. Bhavatanunam. You know, this prayer was spoken by Nalakura Manigrif. Vani gunanu kathane shravanau kathayam. They said, my dear Krishna, actually there is one verse before this. You want to know that? It's a very beautiful verse. I think that is 10:10:33. 10:10:33. In that verse they had told Krishna,
అనుజానీహి నవభూమన్ తవ అనుచర కిం కరౌ దర్శనం నౌ భగవత ఋషే ఆసీదనుగ్రహాత్.
సెయింగ్
అనుజానీహి నవభూమన్,
ఓ మై డియర్ కృష్ణ, ప్లీజ్ గివ్ అస్ పర్మిషన్ టు రిటర్న్ బ్యాక్ టు అవర్ అబోర్డ్.
బట్ బిఫోర్ దట్ దే ఆర్ సెయింగ్ తవ అనుచర కిం కరౌ,
వి ఆర్ ద సర్వెంట్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ సర్వెంట్
నారద ముని. దర్శనం నౌ భగవత,
and we have got your darshan. How? By his mercy.
Rishir asid anugrahat,
by that Rishi's mercy we could get your beautiful darshan.
Like that they are saying.
After saying that, subsequently they are saying this, vani gunanu kathane shravanam kathaya. They are saying, my dear Lord, let us use, may we use our vani. Vani means speech. Guna anukathane, in order to glorify your qualities and pastimes. Shravanav kathayam, let us use our ears in hearing your pastimes.
And then they are saying, hastau cha karmasu manah tavapada yodna.
May we use our hands, because with their hands and legs they had performed abominable activities before, enjoying in the Mandakini Ganga, Shiva's garden, and with women with no proper dress in their bodies, they were enjoying in the waters. So now they are saying, maybe use these hands in offering service to you, offering flowers to your lotus feet, offering garlands for you, offering service to you with our hands and legs.
Hastau cha karmasu manastavapadayo svrityam shirastava ivasa jagat praname srishtisthadam.
So with our head, may this head bow down to all the things of this world, they are saying, which are all your expansions. Not only we offer obeisances to you, everything that has come from you, because it has come from you, we consider that also divine, they are saying. You want to offer obeisances in all the directions, because everything has been created by you.
And then they are saying, drishtin satam darshanaist bhavatanuna.
Sadam means the devotees of the Lord. And we also offer obeisances to those devotees who are just like yourself. Because you are supremely pure and your devotees are also pure. So we want to offer to your devotees, because they were saved by a devotee, Narada. They are thinking like this. So here, this is also Indriya Arteshu Vairagyam. How? Because they want to use their Indriya only in Krishna's service. They are saying with darshana means with our eyes, let us do your darshan. With our mouth, let us sing your glories. With our hands and legs, maybe use it in your service. It's a very beautiful prayer. They have been very sinful before, and now they have become totally purified. So this gives us a hope that all of us can make our impure senses into pure spiritual senses. It's possible. And Devahuti says, these senses which we have, like the eyes, ears, nose and all these things, it is explained in that section of Devahuti. These are not the real senses. The real senses are in the Atma, the spiritual senses, with which we serve Krishna in the spiritual world. But these senses are imitation senses. The spiritual body has eyes, but the material body also has eyes. Material body means not these eyes, I am talking about the subtle body. Sukshma Sharir also has a copy of the eyes, which is a perverted reflection. The spiritual body has ears, but the material body also has ears. Spiritual body has nose and tongue and everything. So everything in spiritual body, the material counterpart is there in the subtle body. Subtle body has five types of abilities. Shabda, Sparsha, Rasa, Rupa, Gandha. These things are there in the subtle body. These are only organs or instruments, like the eyes and the ears and nose and everything. It's very superficial. So they are originally there in the subtle body. Shrotram, Chakshu, Sparshanam, Vasanam, Granam, all these things. They are there. So now, the ones in the subtle body and the ones in the spiritual body, what is the difference between the two? The five senses in the subtle body, they are impure. Why are they impure? Because they have been wandering in this material world and they have picked up so many dirty vibrations through this jnanendriyas and karmendriyas that they have accumulated them all in the subconscious mind. So they are very, very impure. Jayati Maharaj calls it as kadindriyai. Vidadanopi natrupyad. Sarvabhaum Kadindriyaihi, he says. Very famous verse. All of you repeat this verse. Evam Varsha Sahasrani.
Evam
manashashtair manasukham vidadano pinatrupyat sarvabhauma kadindriyaihi. He is saying that sahasra means thousand. For thousands of years, O Devayani, I tried to enjoy the kingly delights along with you. We were trying to enjoy this world. But what is my realization? He says, Vidadano api natrupyat. Although I was given full freedom to enjoy this material world, material sense gratification, natrupyat means, I didn't become satisfied. Sarubhauma means the king of the whole world. Kadindriyaihi, he says. What is kadindriyai? In pure senses. So, these bodily senses are like a blanket over the soul. The real senses are in the soul. And the nature of the spiritual senses is such that if you kindle them and if you serve Krishna, Ananda Ambuli Vardhanam Patipadam Purnamrita Swadhanam, they will lead you to ever-expanding, everlasting bliss. That's the nature of spiritual senses. You can see that sometimes in kirtan your heart starts swelling more and more. You feel the kirtan is going on. You feel it's like a shoreless ocean. Bhakti is called as a shoreless ocean. There is no limit only. And all sides is expanding. Ananda Ambudi means it's a ocean of bliss. Vardhana means it expands it. That is the meaning of that. Ananda Ambudi Vardhana. On the other hand, material senses which are like the blanket over the spiritual body, these senses are so limited. They cannot give us lasting satisfaction. Like the tongue, you put a gulab jamun, and gulab jamun goes inside, the tongue loses its taste. It's finished. Very short-lived pleasures. So we have the choice. Do you want to have flickering, short-lived pleasure, and for that you want to trade your spiritual bliss? You want to trade your spiritual bliss for that? That is your choice. Or you want to restrain the temporary sense gratification so that you can get the everlasting bliss of the soul. You know, it's like saying, somebody tells you, I'll sell a very beautiful picture to you. The price you have to pay is your two eyes. If they say, pluck out your two eyes and give, I'll give you a beautiful photo. Is it useful? It's useless. What are you going to do after buying the picture? You can't see them. Similarly, this material sense gratification is like that. In order to get this material sense gratification, my Lord, it just takes away our eternal birthright to be with Krishna in the spiritual world. Material sense gratification is a big impediment for an aspiring spiritualist, one who is eager to reach Krishna. That is why we will conclude with this song, that Gauranga Balitehabe, we will sing that song. We will sing here.